This is Julia.
And
this is The Commons. Place and location take an active role in determining political agency and shape our social fabric. So, Kevin and I went to the somewhat hidden Northeast precinct to record our interview. And here it is. Hey folks, this is Julia from The Commons. I'm here with Kevin Foster, an independent journalist here in Portland, Oregon. He is published with Mother Jones and also has a significant following on multiple platforms, including his Substack, Last Week in Hell. Thanks for coming on X-Ray, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm enjoying the sunshine.
Yeah, thanks for being willing to let me drag you out to the Northeast Precinct. Yeah. To be clear, hanging outside a police station is not consistent with my idea of a good time. Yeah, in an effort to bring you all to the location of some of where the news is happening, Kevin and I have gone to the Northeast Precinct because Kevin just published an article titled Advocates Question Spike in Portland Police Response Times Amid Controversial Funding Campaign. And that is on Kevin's Substack, Last Week in Hell. What was really burning in your mind? You're like, this needs to be said.
Yeah, I think it was early June, Portland for All, which is a local volunteer-led community-based nonprofit, posted these numbers from 2020 to 2025 showing a really dramatic increase in Portland police response times versus Portland fire and rescue, which I think at face value is not necessarily an apples to apples comparison. But there was this, they were saying that staffing was relatively stable in both departments, and the number from 2020 to 2025 was 182%, so almost a threefold increase in police response times during that time. And that was that seemed like a pretty big thing. They were calling for city council to investigate, and I just really didn't see much coverage of this.
And that was PDX for All calling for city council to do an investigate?
Yeah, Portland for All, PDX for All.
Okay, and that 182% increase, that's in, is that the time that people are waiting for police to respond to a call?
Yeah, so I actually spoke with somebody from Portland for All about this, Andres Oswill. And so the increased time doesn't have anything to do with, I think it's the Bureau of Emergency Communications, which is who picks up when you call 911. It's when they officially refer it to the police and when the police arrive on the scene. So it's that time between the actual dispatch from emergency communications and police getting there. So it doesn't actually have to do, there was for a while, my understanding, an issue with emergency communications having a lot of lag time, people being on hold on 911, which obviously is bad, but I think a lot of that has actually been remedied.
Because the process is someone calls 911 and then the person on the phone who answers the 911 call then has a range of options where they can send this call. And then some of those calls go to the Portland Police Bureau and they end up answering those. And from some research I did before this conversation, it looked like there's 1,200 about calls made in Portland each day, but only, for example, 600 get sent to the Portland Police Bureau to actually dispatch them to those locations. How many police do we have in Portland right now, and how does that compare to those numbers?
Yeah, so there's about, I think it's something like 800 sworn members, and then it's around 540, 550 sworn officers, and then about 300, some of those are listed for patrol. And then there's a whole thing that we can get into on the percentage of those officers that are trainees, but yeah.
Okay, so there are around 800 police officers who are sworn in to do the job of policing, and 300 are patrol.
It's a little confusing what sworn member means. I don't know. I don't think that's actually officer. I think officer is technically the number of 550 or so. When they talk about it on their website as the total, the staffing, they list the 800 number. But patrol, I think, is just people who are actually patrolling around. It's not, there's investigators and criminalists and other things that are included in that sworn officer realm.
Okay. That does clarify, like, some of the ratios of calls and police officers that are actually in their cars driving around responding to dispatches. We have three precincts. We have the central precinct, we have the east precinct, and we have the north precinct. We are currently at the north precinct, and it's this giant gray building with like huge garage doors that open, and then there's two large parking lots. There's dozens of cop cars around here, and a lot of them, I'm certain, are undercover cop cars and don't have the Portland police printed on the side of them. And you could easily just drive past this place, and I'm sure that's the intention, and not even notice that it is a precinct.
Especially down MLK, like, you don't really notice it, but then if you come out back, it becomes a lot more obvious, but yeah.
Yeah, the front of the building is really in the back of the building.
Yeah.
On the back of the building, it says North Community Policing Center, North Precinct, but facing MLK, it's just a white concrete wall, essentially. Yeah. But yeah, let's get back to this article. So you mentioned Oswell from PDX for All. He notes response times and staffing aren't really lining up. Do we know when they started diverging, where the numbers started getting weird?
I don't know exactly, but the data that they showed was from 2020 to 2025. Portland City Council commissioned a study on this that was presented in, or the findings were given in June 2026. And in that, they measured from like 2018 to 2025. But you see these really big spikes from 2020 to 2025. It's increasing. I don't know the exact percentages per year, but I think especially in 2022 and 23 and 24, it was going up a lot. It has started to level out a little bit, but I think the big kind of point of this article is trying to get to why is that number going up so much if staffing is remaining stable.
Especially after witnessing the budget process at City Council, there was a lot of press from Chief Day around, oh, if we don't put enough money into police, you're going to see these response times go up. But the thing is, the response times are actually already up.
Yeah. Naturally, every department is going to fight for their staffing. I think in this case, I don't necessarily think that there's a lot of disagreement around if we were to hire more police, response times are going to go down. It's just more officers on the street, more people out, you're able to get there faster. I don't think that's really controversial. But the question is, do you have this campaign, the Safer Portland campaign? They're talking about taking hundreds of millions of dollars from the Portland Clean Energy Fund, and that's, I think it's something like $400 million out the gate, because they're talking about 25%, and then I'm pretty sure it's ongoing. So it would mean we're using a significant portion of this to fund policing. And the question is, how much will that actually reduce response times? And I think that's where the concern comes in. If you're looking at these numbers and you're seeing that the staffing was not changing, but we have a nearly threefold increase in police response times, and that's a very dramatic increase. That raises a lot of questions, and I can tell you a number of different things about what I was told about why that might be happening, but yeah.
You noted that there is an individual named Allen.
Kevin Allen?
Yeah, Kevin Allen, who gave you a really long list of reasons why there is increased response times. What did you make of that list?
Yeah, I appreciated how thorough it was, but I had a lot of follow-up questions and had to go through some of the details and look into it a bit. And one of the biggest things is in what seemed like maybe the most compelling explanation for the increase in response times is basically, he said, oh, we have, I think it's something like 90 officers who are in training right now. If you're a trainee, you're not able to go out on patrol by yourself. Therefore, you need somebody with you, which means that you're not actually contributing to lower response times. So that seemed like a really big deal. Like, that could be something that's significant. If you have a huge spike in the proportion of officers who are trainees, then that would mean you have a lot less officers going out into the field to deal with calls. The problem is, I did ask Sergeant Allen about this, and he just wasn't immediately able to give me the numbers on this, which I don't fault him for that, but I ended up having to use Wayback Machine to go and look at the... There's basically a public web page where Portland Police Bureau presents its numbers for how much staff they have, and I went back to other times in June and July in the past 4 or 5 years, back to 2022, and I found that if you subtract the number of trainees from the total number of sworn officers, the variance is actually still quite small. Actually, in 2025, they had more officers that were non-trainees than they did in 2022 and 2024. And that's where it gets concerning. That explanation doesn't really seem to add up, because if you have more officers who are able to go out and take calls, then you're still seeing response times increase.
So response times are still going up, even while they have more officers that are out of training and ready to go and do work on their own inside their own vehicle, basically.
It's hovering around 440 to 480. And that number fluctuates throughout the year as they have retirements and more people coming on. But generally speaking, it seemed relatively stable through, like, especially if you're looking at the specific same time period as right now, when we're looking like June and July.
You also note that there were calls that were taken by Portland Street Response, but that those calls being taken by Portland Street Response didn't lower the response time.
So there's a number of things. Basically, a couple of the other things that Sergeant Allen brought up were around operational changes, how they respond to calls, if they spend using, I believe the specific wording was time as a tactic to try and de-escalate. That means calls take longer. It means people have, there's less time between calls. And there, it wasn't really, I wasn't really easily able to deduce, and I don't think Sergeant Allen really could provide data on how long it was taking to resolve situations, because for all we know, it could be that calls are taking twice as long to resolve, and that would have a significant impact on the response times. It came down to this idea of 182% increase in response times. It appears that has to do with operational changes, if we're to take everything at face value. But in the, where things start to get more complicated is, like you said, with the Portland Street Response calls. From the city data that was provided in the city's report, in 2023, they took on about 14,000 calls for, this would be like lower priority or at least non-armed, no threat to the person who's going to respond. They took on about 14,000 calls that normally would be going to the Portland Police Bureau. And then the next year it was about 12,000. 2025, they didn't have data on yet, but it's something that is being pulled out of the equation that Portland Police Bureau doesn't have to respond to. So that could potentially reduce response times. And so it starts to get even more murky at that point. Something that did come up in this too, in the city report, is, and this is probably even more confusing, during this time period from 2018 to 2025. So the increase that was cited in the Portland for All thing was 2020 to 2025, but from 2018 to 2025, the percentage of all the percentages of calls went down. So low priority, medium priority, and high priority. I believe high priority went down the most, like 31% or something like that. So that should indicate another significant decrease in the number of situations that have to be dealt with. And that's where it just, I hate doing this with articles in a way, but it's like, I don't really feel like I got a solid answer at the end of the day as to why this is happening. And it's possible that it's all in these reasons that I was told. It's just like hard to parse the data on that, or we don't have the data, but it is very confusing considering the all of the numbers that I'm looking at that are admittedly probably somewhat overwhelming for a lot of people. It was a challenging article to write, for sure.
Yeah, just from what you said earlier about what you felt was the conclusion of your conversation with Sergeant Allen, it seems like there's a lot of operational murkiness going on, and it's hard to parse out what exactly is the problem, but clearly there is one if there is an 182% increase in wait time to dispatched calls. The question really becomes, okay, is more staff the answer to a murky operational question? It's being presented as like a blanket, this will fix everything. If you go to the Safer Portland website, you all listeners probably have seen this as well because they're going on collecting signatures for their ballot initiative. But they say, if we have more staff, if we take 25% of the Portland Clean Energy Fund, then we'll be able to do all these initiatives that you all want us to do with policing, do community outreach, and initiate the training protocols and whatnot that we've taken but we haven't really implemented. The staff has been maintained throughout this time, but the wait times for calls is going up. That really draws that ballot initiative into question. This ballot initiative has had multiple pitfalls. They're in a legal battle right now, if that's correct?
Yeah, there's a state investigation because, and this is, again, this is like that first question you asked me that kind of compounds with why I was interested in this, is there's the complaints that are coming up about this petition are that campaign canvassers, signature gathering, are not presenting an honest picture of what the measure will do. They're saying that it will reduce response times, but the petition or the initiative doesn't actually say how it's going to do that. This is a ballot measure initiative that we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars going into police. I think the city report estimated something to up our staffing levels and get all these things going. We'd need over $300 million by 2035 or something like that. Or maybe it was more, I'd have to look back at the numbers, but there's this question of how much is increasing staffing going to reduce these response times? Is it going to reduce crime? Something that Sergeant Allen did bring up, and this is where one of the operational changes potentially could be affecting things, is what are the police prioritizing? Are they prioritizing response times, or are they going and doing more community outreach and crime prevention things that they indicated they believe that's what's a big piece of what's lowering crime? I'm sure that's up for debate, but that is a whole other thing too, is that crime is also down, or at least violent crime. But the other side of that is, if you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, people, especially on the progressive side, are going to ask the question, is it more effective to put that into police, or should we use that money, like with the Clean Energy Fund, to invest in transit or something that is going to improve people's economic well-being and reduce, because there's a lot of research that indicates that if you want to lower crime, lowering poverty is a huge, if not the most important piece of that. And I think that is a serious discussion that needs to be had around this.
Yeah, policing is not the only way to reduce crime, and doesn't even necessarily directly reduce crime. Thank you for bringing that up. I had so many thoughts while you were saying that. Yeah, just another piece I want to get onto, and I don't know if this is rabbit trailing too much, but one of the things that Counselor Avalos brought up is that if we keep dividing the PSEF fund further, then the whole fund could be delegitimized and we wouldn't even have the fund anymore. It would just completely disintegrate and fall through. And this fund is right now, there's millions of dollars coming in. It's supporting so many healthy initiatives around our city. It was fought for tooth and nail by so many people in our city. It would be tragic for it to fall through. Do you know if this would cause the PSEF to fall apart?
Yeah, so I'll start this by saying I am not the most knowledgeable person on PSEF, but what I think is very problematic is that this measure is not even pretending to be in the original interest of what PSEF is. That's very obvious. What might be a more genuine way, and this is, I guess, my opinion, but what might be a more genuine way of approaching the issue is saying something like, instead of using 25% of PSEF to fund police, we want to cut the PSEF tax by 25%. And then and basically replace it with a new one that's like a police tax so that we can, or a public safety tax or whatever. I think that there is a serious risk of eroding that. I think the general vibe that I have gotten from talking to a lot of people in Portland is that a big issue with PSEF is we have a lot of this money and we need to use it more. We need to start using it because we've seen this in practice with the Moda Center, with police, with the budget. Every single person is going to start trying to bite off pieces of that over and over, exactly what Councillor Avalos is saying. And I think in practice, I think that very well could lead to it essentially eroding. In practice, the mission will no longer be there. To be fair, I don't know how much of PSEF is committed to different things, and that's where I say I don't necessarily know 100% everything about the PSEF fund.
The idea that there are PSEF funds that are unspent is a bit of a misnomer that is going around. A lot of people are saying it, but it's part of the rhetoric that has been circulating around this ballot initiative, because from what I've seen and also what I've heard Councillor Angelita Murillo say is, every single dollar from the PSEF fund is actually accounted for with projects. And I've also seen that because you have to apply for the grants to get the PSEF money. And it opens every year where all these nonprofits, they can apply for these chunks of money. And the city designates projects and are like, okay, if you are in, for example, the Southeast region of Portland, and you have an initiative that you need funded for community gardens or more environmentally friendly transportation, then you can apply to this grant. And then the city reviews all of those applications, and then they approve the ones they want to fund, and then they go back out, and you can actually see that all of this money has gone to all these projects, because there are nonprofits that don't get the grants that they applied for. So I actually think all of that money is accounted for, we'd actually be taking money from existing projects that would improve our city and putting it toward police. And I also really like that you pointed out that they're asking to take a chunk of money away from a tax that was fought for by people in Portland for clean energy. And it's true, it would be more genuine for them to actually create their own tax of corporate income and then say this is for policing or this is for public safety and fight for it and then win it in order to get that funding.
But that's unpopular and it requires transparency.
It is unpopular and it does require transparency. It's also a lot of work.
I can sympathize a lot with the people who feel like this is very, and they're getting a lot of complaints because it does present as very schemey. It feels like you're trying to cut out your piece of the pie even though you weren't invited to the cookout. With the PSEF stuff, that's where I'm like, I feel like I've heard bits and pieces about how much it's committed already, and I think, yeah, like you said, all of it or a lot of it is committed already, and for some reason, that's not breaking the mold, that message. Maybe that has something to do with needing to be more open about communicating when a project is funded by PSEF, not to get like super big politics on it. But that's a big thing that people talked about with the Biden administration, was like, you're not emphasizing your wins enough. And if you want people to believe in the mission of PSEF, you probably need to tell people what it's doing. And that's I don't mean to criticize across the board, but I know people are doing this. It just, I think, like you said, there's a lot of misinterpretations going around with it potentially.
Yeah, this is a small public service announcement for the Inflation Reduction Act of the Biden presidency.
Yeah.
It's a fun Google. It might make your day a little bit better.
Or worse.
Yeah, or worse.
I realize where we're at with it now. But.
Yeah. It was awesome. It was cool. There's still cool things coming from it, but it has been shot up a few times. Yeah, I think in my brain, I just go to the worst case scenario where this ballot initiative passes and then it violates the legal framing of the Portland Clean Energy Fund. And then not only are we not able to even fund the initial mission of the Portland Clean Energy Fund, but now we also are not getting money that people wanted from the ballot initiative to go towards public safety. We just don't have any of it. And that is an actual risk here.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge reason why they're being investigated as a ballot initiative, because doing something like this, you're not only jeopardizing your own ballot initiative, you're jeopardizing an existing tax that's benefiting thousands of people who live in Portland.
In the event that this ends up going worst case scenario, I think there's a serious argument that I feel like a lot of the people all across the spectrum will complain about Portland not getting things done or the bureaucracy or whatever. And it's like, this is how you create a massive legal bureaucratic hurdle that very well could cause a lot of problems. I think I sometimes feel like there's misplaced judgments about what is creating that sort of lack of feeling of progress. I think there's a lot of stuff thrown at city council, which I think is fair to complain about how things are going as well. But I also think that this is what's important to recognize, that this can come from a lot of different places. I was talking to somebody recently and they were saying Portland has a lot of really great ideas, but the execution is not always there. And that is, I think, something that probably everybody wants to change. And this could end up being another thing that is throwing a wrench into that.
Thinking about your article, is there anything that you want to add or elaborate on?
Yeah. I didn't even get into the whole, I talked with Portland for All about this. I didn't even get into the whole discussion around overtime pay and the issues with hiring. It seems like from what I'm seeing, Portland Police Bureau is having an easier time. They're hiring more people, but then they're spending a significant amount of money on overtime. And that a lot of that is funded by the vacant positions that they have. So there's this argument that they need this influx of cash to hire. And I think the reason I didn't get into that is because that's the whole other complex topic around what is this money going to be used for if they get it? They already spend a lot on recruitment. And something that didn't end up in the article, but Portland for All Oswald was saying, was I think if you told people we're going to take money from climate to pay for advertising for police, people would be very reluctant to sign off on that. I'm not saying that's exactly what would happen here. I think there's potentially a very varied number of things, but it does present some issues. And I think the other thing that I have seen that I didn't feel like really talking about is there's a lot of talk from police about how the people's opinion, public opinion on them has changed. It shifted heavily after 2020 and became very negative. I think it's silly for the head of the police union to be chiding city council for talking badly about the police when people have real complaints about your conduct. I think it's fair for Samir Kanal is like the police accountability guy, and you're talking, and you have other counselors who are talking about essentially taking money from police accountability stuff. That's a threat to systems that people wanted, they voted on to get in. And that I've seen that just in the discourse around this, that lack of faith in police. And there's a lot of people that I hesitate to call it a conspiracy theory, but I can understand why people are saying these things. They think that police have just started to slack off, or that they're not responding to calls. There's people talk about doing this as a sort of bargaining power to gain more staff because your response times get bad. I don't think there's any realistic way to prove that. I'm not saying that's what I believe. I think that it's what is problematic is that stuff is naturally going to come up if we don't have a clear answer as to why there's a threefold increase in response times. And that's where I think a lot of the, you know, conversation around, oh, people are so anti-police now, it's in a lot of people's minds, and I think rightfully, it's the job of police to fix that problem because they broke the trust of the community in a lot of ways in 2020. I don't have the depth of lore on that, but there's a real rift here, and I think a lot of people are understandably hesitant to be giving away money. And it's the Portland Police Bureau is not leading the charge on the Safer Portland initiative, but the Portland Police Association is. They are a huge funder of this. It's funded by Jeff Swickard and the head of Columbia Sportswear. These are big corporate donors that people don't trust. The police union is not the same as the police bureau, but it does affect people's opinion of the police bureau. And I think that there's a lot to be said about if this measure could be harming that impression even more. Yeah.
Overall, it's not a good look to have huge corporations backing your ballot initiative, especially when you have the common slogan around Portland where it's people over property, and then it's the property people who are funding the police. Yeah. It directly goes head to head with that. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are like, show me those spreadsheets. If you want more money for hiring people, show us exactly where you're going to apply those people. It's really nice that you say you're going to do more community initiatives and that you're going to, you know, improve your response times. But if we can't actually see what you're doing with your police right now, then it's hard to back you up. And I saw this personally because I've been to a couple of the Coffee with the Cop with Loretta Smith. And specifically the one on Sandy Boulevard was really alarming to me. And I reported on this in November of last year, because there were significant community members coming forward and they had complaints about the way that sidewalks were painted, the kind of lights that were next to the sidewalks, and basically traffic safety issues that aren't the responsibility of the police but are actually the responsibility of PBOT. And there was a person from PBOT in the audience of this Coffee with a Cop raising their hand and saying, oh, actually, that's a problem for PBOT. We're aware of it. We're working on putting, for example, another flashing sign instead of just the yellow crosswalk diamond next to the crosswalk. But Juanita Swartwood, who is a person who put this ballot initiative forward for the Safer Portland, was also in the audience. And she was really framing all of these public safety issues that are often the responsibility of PBOT to put in better signage, etc. She was framing all of these issues as something that the police could deal with if only they were funded more. And I actually asked, I was like, okay, so what role do you have in our city? Can you do anything about these public transportation issues? Are you engaging with the houseless population? Are you referring them to shelters, etc.? And the police emphatically said no, they weren't involved with both the public safety things that people were bringing up that PBOT was saying that they were responsible for, and also they said over and over that they weren't responsible for directing people towards shelters. But yet, just a couple weeks ago, I saw a police officer approach an unhoused man at a street corner, and he was pointing and showing this man this pamphlet that he had. And so I talked to the cop and I asked him, I said, hey, when you are called, because he had been called to actually talk to that man by someone passing by, I was like, when you're called to engage with an unhoused person, are you given shelters to refer them to? And he said, yes. So there's just a lot of ambiguity around what the police are actually doing, because that's definitely mixed messages.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this conversation is about opportunity cost. It's what is, if we put all this money into police, would it be more effective to instead put it into PBOT or TriMet or parks or what have you? And I think it's frustrating to see what I would consider at times disinformation coming from police, I think especially from the police union. I think what people really want to see is transparency, and if you don't have the data, if you don't know the answers to these questions, I think people would rather you just say that. But the thing is, that looks bad, and you, if you don't have the answers to that, and that makes it harder to give you more money and justify taking away from other areas. It's just very clear that a lot of people don't think that this is a genuine effort. Whether or not they think we should have more police, I think there's a feeling that maybe this isn't the way to go about it, but that's going to come down to if they get the signatures, and if it goes to the ballot, and if it can overcome the various legal challenges that it's facing. We'll know what people really think about it.
I think about the woman who comes to city council frequently and talks about how her small business in downtown is being broken into and the police aren't showing up. And if there was more transparency, she might have a reason for that. But now this ballot initiative is the only thing for her to grasp for, and I don't think that's fair to her or to anyone else. Having just heard that interview with Kevin Foster, I'm really curious about you all. Do you live near a precinct? What do you think about where the precincts are? Do they impact your life? Do they not? Why do you think they impact your life? Why don't you think they impact your life? Considering this story, how do you want your city to move forward? That interview was with Kevin Foster, a local independent journalist that you'll probably see out in the streets during a protest or gathering data on what's happening at City Hall. Kevin Foster has been published in Mother Jones and has a significant following all over the internet. If you want to follow Kevin Foster, you can find his Substack, which is called Last Week in Hell. I hope that you take the time to connect and read and listen to your local journalists, because we are the people who are sitting right next to you. We are your neighbors, and we are working hard to make sure that you get the news that impacts your day. Not just impacts your day on a huge national level, but impacts how much you're paying for your water, how your political systems work at the local level, how your electricity gets to your house, who decides if your rent goes up or down. That's what independent journalists do. We're the bridge between you and the systems that govern your life. So I hope you tune in.